Primus Tracks with Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! Primus fans old and new, Primus fans who consider themselves lucky, welcome. If you feel like you're unlucky, come on in. Don't worry, we will offset your bad luck. You have found Primus Tracks. Congratulations, we are at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. I am Josh, and right over there, the luckiest guy I know is Frankie.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, Frankie. You know, I say that you are so lucky because I have seen all this wonderful photographic evidence that you are able to somehow run into, oh, I don't know, people like Les Claypool, Sean Lennon, Tim Alexander, just on the street somehow. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pure coincidence.
Yeah, that you occupy the same space and time as them.
Yes.
When they're just out walking around. Amazing. Photos from those encounters are on your Instagram, is that correct?
Yeah, all of them are there. Well, you can find me at Frankie Beristein for the illustration project. And so, here's an interesting fact for our listeners.
Oh, yes.
I often share these experiences when they happen in the moment.
Yeah.
And on one occasion, Josh said that he was going to camp outside my home at some point, and he was going to wait for me to arrive to take a ton of pictures with me.
I'm still booking my travel plans for that. Yes, it will happen. At some point, you will be returning to your home, and now, Frankie, excuse me, I'm a huge fan of your podcast. You know, it'll be great. We have a little bit of business to take care of before we talk about today's track, which is, of course, Is It Luck? Before we get there, Frankie, it's time to welcome a couple more people to the Punch Bowl. Our first Punch Bowl inductee is Joey935, who says, I sucked information through the holes in my skull. So much to take in. The Primus nerd in me is reveling in pure joy. This is probably the biggest treasure chest of Primus knowledge that one can possibly attain, next to befriending the Colonel himself. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Joey. That's so cool.
Absolutely. And all that Primus knowledge, of course, comes from Frankie. I'm just here to make dumb jokes. So, thanks, Joey. And our other Punch Bowl inductee today is the name, goes by the name Suckin' on Chili Dogs. Well, that's a great summer activity. So, who says, this podcast sucks. Great podcast of one of my favorite bands. If you're into Primus, then you need to start listening now. Short and sweet and to the point. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Chili Dog. And remember, if you are inducted into the Punch Bowl, you can show your membership card to Frankie at a Primus show, and he is legally obligated to buy you up to three beers. Three beers. Find Frankie, membership card, three beers.
Or Frankie, three cans of CPUP.
Three cans of CPUP. Look at that. He's already expanding the offer. What a guy. Not everybody drinks beer, of course. So thank you for that, Frankie. On to miscellaneous debris. I actually don't have much to report from our last episode, in which we covered 11, although our good friend Tim Solyan said we missed a lot. Cryptically, he said, you guys missed a lot. And he didn't provide too many specifics. So I suppose maybe he's saving those details for his podcast or the book he's going to write. The book he should write. My goodness. This guy's got stories for days. Every once in a while, I'm talking to him on Instagram or Facebook, and he's just like, oh, yeah, let me tell you about the time I jammed with Rush. I'm like, shut the hell up. Are you kidding me? And then he's sending us pictures. It's freaking crazy, this guy.
Yeah, Tim is a treasure trove of amazing anecdotes and pictures.
I told him he should just be on every single episode with us, but I fear he would tire of us quickly. So I want to hold off on that for now. But Soya, shout out to you. Tell us what we missed. I'm very curious to hear what it is.
I met Tim in person back in New Year's Eve 2019, Sausage and Claypool and Delirium.
Oh, nice.
So before the show, he looked very busy, so I didn't approach him. But when the show was done and we were hanging out outside, he came up to me and I asked him if he was Tim Soya, and he said yes. So we started chatting. And it was really cool because, you know, he was telling me stuff about Primus, about Les, about his work with them over the years. He talked a little bit about Roger Waters as well.
Yeah.
And then we started talking about the cassette tapes. So we started talking about the Sausage tape and the Primus Sucks tape. And we got extremely anorak with this topic. And I noticed that my girlfriend was moving around, and his wife was also like looking both ways, extremely nervous. And then some guy approached us and he asked Tim's wife if she was okay. And she said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just making sure that, the guy doesn't come back here. In that moment, we realized that while Soya and I had been chatting about Primus tapes, there was this guy who was trying to touch a girl outside the venue. Yeah. And then Soya's wife was trying to scare him off to help the girl. But then the guy was, it looked like he was going to come back. And I mean, all of that stuff was happening while Soya and I were immersed in Primus talk. And we had absolutely no clue about all that stuff happening.
If you're really going to go Anorak, make sure you're in a safe place next time.
Yes.
Thank you. That's, yikes. You know, that's 2 a.m., you know, on Market Street in San Francisco, right? So, well, I'm glad everything ended up okay. Goodness. So, yeah, to close miscellaneous, thank you for that, by the way, Frankie, but to close miscellaneous debris, we actually got a lot of love for 11 on our socials. I guess it quietly is kind of a favorite of our of the Primus diehard, so that's really cool to see that we're not the only ones.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let's talk about Sailing the Seas of Cheese, track number 7, titled, Is It Luck? And don't forget, you have to do the upspeak at the end. Is it luck? Because it is a question. I have come to call this track part 1 of 3, part 1 of what I call the horny trilogy. Because if you listen to this track, and then Granddad's Little Ditty, and then Tommy the Cat, tracks 7, 8, and 9 all in a row, all three of those together have this weird sexual vibe. Thankfully, it doesn't descend into outright perversion, but this track probably comes the closest to being in that vein. Although it doesn't, it dips its toes in it, we'll say that. We'll get into that part later, but let's get some track history.
All right, so this track dates back to 1987. The first known performance took place on July 13 in Oakland. After that, it was played a handful more times in the late 80s. You can tell apart the early version from the version that we are more familiar with by the fact that the early version from the late 80s, and I don't mean this in a bad way, because I absolutely adore the early version. It sounds a lot like cartoon music to me, mainly because it's considerably faster than the studio version from Seas of Cheese, which is pretty fast in itself.
Yeah.
But the early version is, you know, it's even more up-tempo. The lyrics, the way that Les sings the lyrics is even more frenetic. And Todd Hood's guitar part adds this element to the track that is very polyrhythmical, but at the same time, it sounds like the theme song to a cartoon show. Do you feel the same way, Josh?
Yeah, I do. We've said it before, that nervy, herky-jerky Talking Heads type thing. So that version really has that vibe, much like a lot of their other work at that time. Todd's guitar part, to me, what I envision when I hear it is somebody rattling coins in a jar really, really, really fast.
Yeah.
that's the vision I get from that frenetic guitar part, as you said.
For me, it kind of reminds me a little of the opening song of the Ren and Stimpy show.
I could see that working, yes, absolutely.
So if people want to hear a good quality recording of the version that we're talking about, your point of reference is Berkeley 1987. Unfortunately, there is no specific date for this performance, but Josh and I agree that it sounds like a radio session more than an actual concert performance, and it's certainly not a demo. So we think that it's a radio session, and it's pretty funny because during the bridge you hear Les saying the following. Can you recall what Les is saying, Josh?
Well, there's a couple of things he does. He starts singing Strangers in the Night, which is really funny.
Yes.
But then he says, where are those condoms? And I think I'll splice him in saying that. But yeah, so he says these things, and that just further supports my horn dog theory here. This is a lot of weird sexual energy to it. So he's talking about what he got.
And it's pretty interesting because just like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver was a work in progress when they performed it in Europe for the first time, you can also hear how Is It Luck goes into a completely different musical outro compared to the Seas of Cheese version. And in this good quality recording that we have, it's actually a shame that as soon as they go into that outro, the volume is completely faded. We only get a few seconds of this really cool thing that they're doing at the end.
And it seems like the spoken word part that appears on Seize a Cheese wasn't ready yet, or maybe wasn't a part of that tune yet, or maybe they just left it out. I'm not sure.
It sounds like it was a later addition.
Yeah.
Perhaps they were not sure how to finish the track at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we're all familiar with the spoken piece and then the way that the song comes back to the frantic ending. But I really, really like the outro on the early version, and I wish we had a longer version.
And then where do we go from there? Where do we go after that early version?
Well, it's interesting because Is It Luck was also played a handful of times during the Frizzle Fry tour in 1990. And at this point, the track resembles a lot more what would appear on Seas of Cheese. But it's strange because if you compare the Frizzle Fry tour versions with the way that they started performing it during 1991, after it had appeared on Seas of Cheese, even though the structure is basically the same, they still sound like two different versions. So I like to call them the Frizzle Fry version and the Seas of Cheese version, because to my ears, they still sound like different songs in a few details here and there. I think that after Seas of Cheese, perhaps Les had mastered the track a lot more, considering they were going to perform it more often. So you can hear a few differences between these versions. So it entered heavy rotation in 1991. Then it was only performed a few times in 92, three times in 1993. And then, Josh, something really strange happened. Is It Luck completely vanished from set lists for 10 years.
Wow.
It would not come back until Tour de Fromage, where it began to be performed on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
When they switched to Hallucinogenetics, it would still be played occasionally. But after that, it becomes quite erratic. It's only been performed a few times in each tour. It cannot be considered at all a certainty for a live performance. Actually, I think it's quite unlikely that you'll get Is It Luck during a live performance.
Well, I only have 118 documented live performances via Toasterland. As with many tracks from 1991, a bunch of the live performances are missing, at least 118. But if you factor in the 45 Fromage shows and the handful of times they performed Seas of Cheese in entirety with Jay Lane, you're at the point where almost half of the live renditions that we know about came from when they played the full album. So outside of that, quite rare indeed.
And what is also interesting is that it was performed a few times in 2018 and a few times in 2017. Those performances are quite heavy because I think when they were touring Desaturating 7, they had a particularly aggressive sound live. If you listen to the performances from 2015 and 2014 for the Chocolate Factory tour, I'd like to call these the clinical performances, because during this tour, you're going to hear versions of Is It Luck that are incredibly polished and technical.
So I do wonder about that approach, and I think we're establishing that pattern, that those tours in 14 and 15 were much more clinical in their approach, really hitting those finer points, I suppose. I guess they've been letting it rip a little bit more recently. It's so hard to tell with this track just by listening to it casually, because it's so chaotic in the studio and live, that I really need to listen closely to hear the differences, I think. This one, I don't think it's more overt like some of the other tracks. Here's where I'm going to start. This is an exhausting 3 minutes and 27 seconds. I don't know if it's because it's so self-indulgent as far as the content of the track, or just the manic energy of it. Maybe it's because of the pure sexual drive that's pushing it, but which is, I think I'm going to shower after we finish recording this. I feel so but this harkens back to that, and I mentioned this earlier, this harkens back to that herky-jerky talking heads approach back in those old days. But on the studio version from Seas of Cheese, Tim is just thundering, and Larry is making these sounds that I'm looking around thinking my toaster pastry is done or something. Like, these squeals are so strange. And then Les is hitting a lot of bass notes in a very tight window in a short space with that main riff. And it really takes a lot of dexterity to play that bass line accurately based on videos I've seen of Les playing it live, but also the many bassists who try to tackle it on YouTube. They're working really hard. But really, it starts with that lick that starts the track in the studio version. That's where it all starts. He must have really liked that a lot. And then they built something out of it with the stops and starts and the guitar freak out, the drum freak out. And then later they must have added that spoken word portion, as it doesn't appear on that earlier version. But did you notice, Frankie, that spoken word portion is sped up? I think it's sped up. I don't think he's recording that in real time. I remember about 25 years ago, I just had some sound software. I was actually able to directly record audio from the CD drive to my hard disk. And I remember specifically slowing down the spoken word part of Is It Luck by about 20%. Like, I did this back in 1995 or so. And you can really hear, especially with the no, 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 no part, you can really hear the rhythm of it when it's slowed down by about 20%. And so that's what I think happened in the studio. And I'll send Ron Rigler a message and see if that's the case, if he remembers. Do you want to hear it slowed down about 20%?
Yeah.
This part here.
But you wasn't impressed. She wasn't impressed at all.
So that part right there, I think, was slowed down about 20%, because that almost sounds like the standard rate of speech for Les Claypool. I was thinking, he can't really talk that fast, can he? So, you know, so they must have been screwing around in the studio, you know, with that tempo and going, okay, we need to slow it down. Then I can record it at this speed and we'll speed it back up. Because there is a little bit of Mickey Mousing going on with his voice too when it's at full speed. Couple of things about the bass. About 18 seconds in, there's some really great fried distortion on the bass where he just, you know, he hits a slab of notes, and it's really reminiscent of what the same thing he does in John the Fisherman. It actually sounds really close to me. And also, I'm going to play something else for you, Frankie. I think what I'm about to play for you is the most sexually suggestive bass notes ever recorded. Kids, cover your ears, please. Oh, wait, sorry. Oops. Well, I was wrong. Those are the most suggestive bass notes ever. I'm sorry. The second most suggestive bass notes ever.
Smile, not safe.
Frankie, when you hear those little slides there on the bass, what do you visualize?
I visualize Les Claypool going apeshit on that on the bass.
Oh, well, for some reason, I envision Ace Ventura doing the pelvic thrusts. Given the lyrical content around there, you know, you want to get lucky, little boy. There's some stuff going on there. So the bass is all over the place, and this is one of those tracks probably where people listen to it and go, what the hell is this guy doing on the bass guitar?
Yeah. It's a really crazy song on bass. And as you said, you know, I've never seen cover on YouTube, which I think successfully replicates what Les is doing. It's a mystery why it's such a rare song live. It could be, you know, really uncomfortable to play, or it's really hard for them. But it's strange that they don't bust it out more often, because as witnessed during Tour de Fromage, it's a song that lends itself to a lot of jamming and interpolation, particularly during the bridge. Because if we refer back to the Tour de Fromage recordings, there are some instances where they squeezed YYZ into the song, and also Money from Pink Floyd, Henry VIII, Inca Roads. I mean, they did a ton of songs paired up with Is It Luck.
That's true. Yeah, they can really open it up there. That's really cool. That's a great opportunity, because it is, like I said, it's just this kind of 3.5 minute slab of self-indulgent intensity and wackiness. And it's all over the place. But to be able to drop that in as the music kind of drops out, it's interesting too, because they kind of keep the they're able to keep the beat. You know, Tim's keeping that drum beat throughout much of the tune. But as far as the drums go, those little bursts of double kick across the tune, they're just such great accents to the bass line, and they lock in so well. I want to point everybody to Tim's right hand, what his right hand is doing throughout this tune, because that's where he's keeping the beat with the cymbals. So the way he switches and where he switches between the ride cymbal, the hi-hat closed, and the open hi-hat, it's just perfect. He knows when to jump between those three because he's closing it up to make things a little more buttoned up. He's opening the hi-hat when things are getting intense, and he's switching to the ride when they're really letting it go, you know, that sort of thing. So he has that real sense of tension and how to create the right atmosphere. I guess the most obvious point of reference is the drum work during that spoken word part, where they can take it almost anywhere. But he's taking it down. He's bringing it back up. He's gawking the snare to get the accents just right. When it drops out, you know, she whispered in my ear, that gawk there. So there's a lot of cool stuff going on with the drums. And I haven't even mentioned yet the drum freakout part when he is just ripping it up. And there's not much else to say other than he rips it up there, you know. And same thing with the guitar freakout part. I have no idea what Larry's doing. A good friend of mine who's an incredibly talented guitar player once said to me, anytime I hear Larry Lalonde playing a solo, I just always assume he's stepping on his guitar. And I don't think he meant that maliciously. I think he just meant that he's not sure what Larry's doing, you know? So it's definitely I think this one is the epitome of magic fingers go, as Joe Gore said, letting it go. He's just going to play whatever comes to his mind. It really does sound like he's stepping all over his guitar. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but it fits. It just fits the wacky energy of this tune.
And I think sometimes Larry had the hardest part, because Les mentioned that there were instances where the songs began as jams between him and Tim Alexander. So some songs reached a point where they were full compositions of drums and bass, and Lur was the last one to come in, and then he had to write a guitar part for a song that was already composed. If we're talking about, you know, any other band, I think it would be easier, but we're talking about Primus. So to write a guitar part for these kind of songs, I think, must be incredibly challenging.
You've got to fill that space, but you can't overdo it, and you can't underdo it either. You can't just sit on the backbeat. You know, sometimes Larry would do that, but in these early albums, he's not doing that at all. He's really finding a lot of space to work in and really making some squealy sounds in this one.
Yeah.
Sure. His main guitar part here is a fire alarm, you know, and it's so shrill, and I love it so much because, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, there was just so much energy to this tune that I used to skip 11 to get to it after Jerry. And I think part of that, though, was lyrically part of the reason I would fast forward to this song. I think there was some wish fulfillment going on because I was a hormone crazed teenager, you know, and I was like, yeah, this is cool. And I had no idea what the hell I was thinking, and I didn't know what was actually happening in this track. The bass part of my anatomy and brain, they knew what was going on, and I just went with it. To put it that way. But as far as the lyrics go, did you notice in the booklet that there must have been a printing limitation for the original release in the CD booklet? Because the lyrics for Granddad's Little Ditty, track 8, are actually printed right after the lyrics to 11 and fit on that
right
page. Yeah.
Right. And there is also an underlying controversy with the lyrics of this song, because there's a phenomenon where if people repeat something enough, it becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really be sure who's right on this one, because there are some sources which say that the lyrics are, these songs always sound so fast. But there are other places where the lyrics are, cyanide works so fast.
Yeah. I'm looking at the lyric book, and it says cyanide works so fast. So maybe that's one that may have changed over time. It's definitely printed as cyanide, yeah. And the other thing I see in here, as I'm looking at the page, you know, we don't actually have the spoken word part printed. And I wonder if that was by design to leave that out. And that happens in some other tracks, too.
Yeah.
We talked about To Defy the Laws of Tradition, and that's probably a copyright issue because he was doing the Schoolhouse Rock thing. There are going to be other tracks that we talk about where some of the lyrics are not printed. And I don't know if that was to avoid some kind of censorship or some kind of controversy, or if they felt like they didn't have the space. But when I look at the page where Is It Luck lyrics are printed, there's a lot of space on the right-hand side. So I don't know if they decided to skip it purposefully. I don't know if that's your Primus Mystery of the Week, but that one's mine. But I won't play the music because yours is the real one. I'm not going to step on your thing, Frankie. Don't worry. It's kind of cool because the repetition of the song titles obviously are kind of chorus. We get some kind of situation or some kind of event, and then the question comes back, is it luck? You know, in the liner notes to the 2013 remix, Les Claypool does say they wanted to keep a lot of the audio intact, but then they kept the lyrics book intact as well. So maybe they didn't just want to mess with that, and that lyrical oversight holds true. But as far as the spoken word part being left off, hey, that's all it takes is a little bit of Googling and you're going to find it. Oh, the other thing before I get into that, I think this is our first track too, where Les Claypool calls out Lur and says, well, Lur.
And Herf.
And gets to do something. And Lur, he calls Lur a lot throughout the studio tracks. And he does, you're right. He also says, well, Herb. And I think this is the only instance where he calls on Tim to do something with the vocal track.
Yeah. And he would then adapt it to Jay during the performances of the track they did with him.
Which is, that's so cool, yeah. I'm so glad he didn't slip up and say, well, Herb, and then turn around and go, sorry, dude. Forgot who I was playing with for a second. But as far as those unprinted lyrics, she said she wanted my body and not my mind, so I showed her my dictionary to show the words that I know. And from not what I examined, which I'm not sure if that's right, and, I can be loquacious when I set my mind down to it. And she wasn't impressed. No. So that's that little spoken word part.
Yeah.
But God, this song is Horn Dog City. Ugh. And I don't know why, like, as an adult, I'm just like, I don't feel grossed out by it, but I just feel like I think it just takes me back to being a teenager and then going, oh, man, your head was somewhere else, buddy. that's what I'm thinking of. But here we are. And Frankie, we're lucky enough. I'll use that word. We're lucky enough to have a podcast. So I think, Frankie, you and I can take this opportunity to finally answer the question. Is it luck? Welcome to Is It Luck, the quiz game in which contestants are challenged to determine whether a given event is a result of luck or the result of a set of circumstances. I'm your host, Sothington Willoughby, and today's contestant is a music archivist from Mexico City. His name is Francisco Beristein. Welcome to Is It Luck. Frankie, can I call you Frankie?
Yes, of course.
Oh, Frankie, thank you so much. And as you know, Frankie, I will list some events, and you will tell us whether it is indeed luck. If you can correctly identify enough situations as luck or not luck, you'll win today's fabulous prize, an all-expenses-paid cruise on the seas of cheese. Are you ready, Frankie?
I'm ready.
Oh, you sound so excited to be here. Now, I'm going to read you a series of clues. Let's start with this one. My socks and shoes always match. Is that luck or not luck?
I don't think it is.
That is not luck. That is impeccable fashion sense. You are one for one. Our next item is, there's a foot at the end of each of my legs.
That's a tough one. I guess for some people, it could be luck.
Luck or not luck, Frankie? 5 seconds.
Yeah, I think it is luck.
That is actually proper DNA sequencing. Okay. You're one for two. You're doing great. Our third item is, some girls like to kiss my face. Hint, Frankie, take a look at my face. Some girls like to kiss my face.
I don't think it is luck.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Frankie. Very kind of you, but I'm sorry. That is indeed the one and only correct answer is luck, and it hurts every time the producers put this one in. Ouch. You're one for three, Frankie, but you still have time. The next item is you can count to 10 and back again.
It is not luck.
Very good, sir. That is not luck unless you go to a public school. Albert! Our next item, item number 5, you're 2 for 4. If you can get over 50%, you'll make it. Our fifth item is, don't take this the wrong way, when the taste of sex is on your lips. Luck or
I don't, I think it is luck.
I'm sorry, Frankie. That is, you know what? We went over and over with this one in the producer's room, and that is definitely not luck. That's just gross. But don't worry, you can still get 50% and win the fabulous prize with our last event, which is love. Love?
I think it is luck.
We'll have to go to the judges on this one. Well, Lur? He's speaking into my earpiece. All right, the judges have said that scientists have attempted to explain love through a series of chemical reactions within the human brain, but are so far stymied and cannot account for all the contributing factors, and the judges have ruled it luck. Well, that puts you at 3 for 6, Frankie, and you win the fabulous prize of an all-expenses-paid cruise on the seas of cheese. All you have to do is go to Pier 43 in San Francisco, California, on the date given to you on this card. Thank you for joining us tonight on Is It Luck? I'm going on vacation, and I know you'll enjoy next week's episode with guest host Bob C. Cock. Good night. Arrivederci! Sorry about that, folks. I had to get that out of my system. Where did we leave off? I guess we left off on live versions that we think our audience should hear. Frankie, I'll defer to you first.
I think any live performance from the archives of Tour de Fromage or Hallucinogenetics are going to be pretty amazing. But one that comes to my mind right now is Minneapolis 2004. This is a really cool concert, Josh, for a couple of reasons. First of all, Is It Luck is placed strategically in the show. It is actually the encore.
That's a cool place for it. Cool blast of energy, yeah.
Yeah, and it's also pretty unique because it has a little tease of Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver. And that is rare at the time because Tour de Fromage was a period of time in Primus history when Les Claypool actually detested that song.
Right.
So that's a rare opportunity to hear some of that song during this era. And the other thing that is really cool about this show, Josh, is, you know, set two is basically Frizzle Fry in its entirety with Is It Luck as the encore. But for set one, you get the following. Here Come the Bastards, which I think is a cool opener.
Mm-hmm.
Those Damn Blue Collar Tweakers. But during Here Come the Bastards, there is some fun banter between Les and the audience. And I think it's rare because I think we're used to Les addressing the audience somewhere between the third or the fourth song. And in this case, he engages the crowd in banter from the get-go during the first track. And he's in Minneapolis, so of course he has to talk about Prince.
Yeah.
So he asked the audience if they had ever... No, it's interesting because he says in this show that at this point he was considering to move. He was looking for a place where he could buy a new property. So this indicates that in 2004, for some reason, Liz was considering moving away from Rancho Relaxo. And he said that Minneapolis was on the list and he wanted to know if it should be higher or lower in the list. So he asked the attendants if it was easy to spot Prince driving his purple car around the highway in Minneapolis. And it's pretty cool because there's not much of a response to his question. So he starts to talk into the microphone and he says, "Hello, hello, I'm speaking to you." So
oh,
after
man.
That, you get one of the most, what I consider one of the most epic moments in Primus live history. You get the Carpenter and the Dainty Bride, the Old Diamondback Sturgeon, Fishon, Mary the Ice Cube, Jerry, and Mutt.
That's
so
a good
that's
one.
Six rainbow songs in a row.
Yeah.
And that has never happened again since.
Oh really?
So jeez. this is a
six
show
pack.
For the books, folks. Please look up Minneapolis 2004.
Yeah. A six pack of the rainbow, you can't beat that. That's fantastic. You know, I'm gonna stick with a show that I attended for mine, and that is Milwaukee 2003. So, but this time, not just because I was there, I went to the Chicago and Milwaukee shows on back to back nights on that tour. In Chicago, the night prior to Milwaukee, a guy chucked a pig mask on the stage, and he hit Les on the hand. As a result, he cut short the track they were playing, which was Old Diamondback Sturgeon. And I can't tell you how dismal that was for me. Because
Because
I was pumped for that tune. And they weren't very far into it, I don't think. And of course, Les castigated the crowd and that kind of thing. Anyhow, the next night in Milwaukee, the guy brings a sign and holds it up. And during Is It Luck, Les talks to the guy. He says, "Okay, show me what the sign says," with that attitude. he's not curious. He's just "Show me the sign." The guy was apologizing to Les for hitting him with the pig mask the night before. And I think that threw Les off a little bit because this is in the middle of Is It Luck during that little break where he would do the spoken word part and he skips it. And Larry starts playing a little samba type groove on his guitar that he's played here and there over the years. And Les starts noodling over it for a while. And that just gets extended for a minute or two. And then he brings him back in with I Smiled and I Said. So they skip the entire fast talking part, which is really interesting. And it's just it's different, because if you listen to all these different sets, you don't get that. You do get the spoken word part.
Yeah.
But Milwaukee, you don't, because of this this guy who's trying to atone for his mistake.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a good listen if you want something out of the ordinary for that part.
In my personal experience, I've only gotten about 20% of the track live. Yeah, they were performing Is It Luck during their first concert in Mexico City. He got as far as the first verse, and some person in the audience threw beer at him.
No.
He said, "Well, I guess that guy doesn't like this song, so we're not going to play it anymore." And he walked up stage.
Oh, man. That sucks.
And he came back with the rainbow for Over the Electric Grapevine.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was my chance to see Is It Luck live, and it's gone forever.
Right. Yeah, it's very disappointing when that happens, because especially if it's during a track you don't get that often, which sounds like
we both
had that experience. That's about the worst experience you can have at a Primus show.
I don't remember what particular show it is, but it always makes me laugh when I hear it. Because, you know, I mean, Les is upset that people are throwing stuff on stage. And he says, with the most eloquent voice ever, "Please, I implore you, if you are considering throwing something up on the stage, please hold on to that object, spin on it, and shove it up your ass."
That sound can only mean one thing, Frankie. It's time for our Primus Mystery of the Week. Take it away.
All right, Josh. Present for your approval the Primus Mystery of the Week. This mystery took place on November 1st, 2014, at the State Theater in New Brunswick, New Jersey. As you can see, it's a Chocolate Factory tour performance.
Yep.
For the encore, you know, it's a pretty cool encore because they performed Pudding Time, Southbound Pachyderm, and Here Come the Bastards. I think that's a cool encore. The thing is, you know, this is a very good quality audience recording that I'm about to play for you. But the thing is that for the entirety of the show, the people around the person recording are quiet for the most part. But then, on Southbound Pachyderm, something very unsettling happens. And it's the reaction from a guy who was probably standing close to the person recording. Are you ready to hear this?
Yes, I am. This is always a wonderful treat when we hear the crowd.
Great job, Almighty! Thank you, God! Thank you, Jesus Christ, Almighty! Oh, my God!
There, this guy just experienced the rapture, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. I mean, this
every time I hear this recording, the mystery for me is this the first time that this guy heard Southbound Pachyderm live? Had he been to a lot of Primus shows and they have never performed it? Or is it his favorite song of all time by anyone? Or did he have some kind of bet going on with his friends about Primus playing this track or not?
Yeah. Had he been praying the entire show up to that point? What was happening? Gosh, he had some kind of spiritual awakening in that moment, and for it to be caught on tape is just beautiful. That is a beautiful moment for a person. This is the best mystery yet. So if you're listening and you know this guy, please, first of all, please get them some help. And then second of all, let us know what was going on. As far as if there was some kind of chemical agent involved in influencing their babe. Wow. Let's listen quickly, compare versions here. And I'm just going to go to a part. This is our 1991 release, original release. This is a vinyl rip. That is a fun freak out right there. There's that. And then let's go to our 2013 remix. Talk about stepping on your guitar, man.
Yeah.
There's some crazy crap going on. What I do like, and I think I've said this before, is on the 2013, we get a little more clarity on the guitar. That's beefed up a little bit so we can hear better what's happening, even though I still don't know what's going on.
For me, I think the keeper is still the original mix.
Yeah. Those double bass kicks, man. Ugh. Those double kicks are so great. So I can't get beyond that as far as the original release. It just has that thunder to it. It just sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So, and you know, the sound balance, the details in the bass, I think, you know, everything just sounds much better to me in the original mix.
Yeah. I think I agree with you there. This is one of those tracks I think the original is preferable for the whole, I think the entirety of the track. Is it luck? Please go take a cold shower because you've been tracked. Next time, Frankie, it's a big one. I mean, we're going to take this podcast on the road to O'Malley's Alley, and we're going to meet a little fella named Tommy the Cat.
Can't wait.
Oh, man. Hold on to your butts. Folks, thank you again for tuning in at Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. Keep following us on social media. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. Tell your Primus pals, old and new. We'll see you next time. Later days.
Willie Mays.
Smile, not say.
Where are those condoms?